Earlier in the week, my husband asked me what I was preaching about today. Wisdom, I said. To which Mr. Smartmouth quipped, "Well, that should be a short sermon." Don't get your hopes up. Truth be told, I have wondered more than once what I was thinking when I chose this topic. At one point during the past week, I seriously considered just standing up and saying, "Well, I sought wisdom and I couldn't find it anywhere," and then sitting back down. Wisdom is one of those realities that falls into the same category as pornography. Think about it. We're not sure how to define it, but we know it when we see it. Wisdom is not easily or conclusively defined. The most helpful definitions use metaphor and image to describe what it might be, what it's not, where it might be found, or where not to look for it. "Knowledge can be communicated, but not wisdom," said Hermann Hesse. "One can find it, live it, do wonders through it, but one cannot communicate and teach it." Hesse's description expresses aptly the difficulty in defining wisdom and highlights the tomfoolery of preaching on it. But elusive though wisdom may be, I choose to address it because I think wisdom is sorely needed and is being drowned out or dismissed by our 21st century cultural cacophony. After the debate debacle on Thursday evening, I won't ask how many of you turned that into a drinking game. I'm even more convinced that our nation and our world are in desperate need of strong, courageous, compelling wisdom voices and paths. Religions, intended as wisdom paths, are failing us in this arena. Priest and author Barbara Brown Taylor suggests that kindness is not a bad religion. You would think our presidential wannabes could find some wisdom in at least that minimalist religious expression. It seems unlikely, though. As I watched Jon Stewart's last installment of The Daily Show, as I cried through it, I found myself wondering if our satirists, our modern-day court jesters, might just be the wisest voices we have today. At least when they smell something, they say something. So at the outset of this sermon, I admit openly and humbly that I feel out of my depth and my comfort zone in this sermon. I'm speaking to you today only as one beggar telling other beggars where I found some bread. One morsel I found is this. When I embrace my seeker spirit and make attempts to identify what I'm seeking, my self-knowledge and awareness deepen. It's not rocket science. The Chinese philosopher Lao Tzu points to this when he suggests that knowing others is intelligence. Knowing yourself is true wisdom. What I mean by the term seeker is one who colors outside the lines, pushes an envelope or two, opens a cryptic door to see what lies on the other side, crosses a border into unknown territory. That way of being in the world has its risks as well as its rewards. My assumption is that most of you are seekers. So think about it. When did you first realize that you are a seeker? What are you seeking? How would you describe the realities inherent in being a seeker? Part of what I hope you will do with this sermon is to reflect on those questions, to think about the roads and paths down which your seeking has led you. Because one morsel of wisdom I found is that the act of naming and claiming what I am seeking is an important component of my journey inward, leading straight to the center not only of my own little self, but to that self with a capital S at the very heart of all things. A second tasty tidbit: pay attention to your dreams. Dreams are clues to who you are in your deepest and truest self, and can lead you to a fuller understanding of what that self needs. I had an unusual and crucial dream that set me on the path to seeking wisdom more intentionally. One morning, several years back now, I woke up with one strange sentence etched in my memory. Here it is. Follow Shrek and his elephant consort, Shubel. That's not a lie. I am not making that up. That was the dream. Follow Shrek and his elephant consort, Shubel. I couldn't get it out of my mind. At first, I saw elephants everywhere. While riding a bike at the beach one day, I saw a statue of an elephant in the front yard. At the beach! The first time I visited my Jungian analyst, I looked around his office. On the bookshelves, hanging on the walls, everywhere I looked was a statue or a picture of an elephant. This sudden proliferation of elephants in South Carolina got my attention. So I looked up elephant lore and discovered that elephants are ancient symbols for feminine wisdom and the ability to discriminate between reality and illusion. Shrek, the ogre, was easier to discern as the unconventional, riskier road less traveled. But Shubel? That stumped me for a while until a friend of mine with whom I had shared this dream found Shubel Stearns, a Congregationalist who in the 1700s became a North Carolina Separatist Baptist preacher. His message, albeit archaic and shrouded in dubious theology, was at its heart a call to spiritual transformation arising from within as one listens carefully to one's inner spirit. He preached a kind of contemplative openness to the inner self and led one of the few, if not the only, seven Baptist movements in the 1700s that championed women's leadership in the church. We don't have many in 2015. Trust me on that. Shubel Stearns was a seeker and a pioneer who paid attention to his inner spirit and called others to do the same. So somewhere in all this interaction with that one dream sentence, I began to recognize that I was being called to seek courageously my own inner wisdom, wherever that led me, and with whom. Pay attention to your dreams. Respect them. Follow their images. Dialogue with them. Let them be your wisdom guides. Another morsel of wisdom I've acquired in recent years: pay attention to the synchronicities between your inner life and your outer life. The more I seek wisdom, the more I realize that words like coincidence, mistake, and accident are human constructs we employ to explain the mysterious interconnectedness at the heart of reality as we know it. Let me illustrate this from my own experience. My dream call to intentionally seek wisdom coincided with my doctoral research on the spiritual needs of adults in midlife. I spent hundreds of hours interviewing and analyzing the data from conversations with 18 different adults about their spiritual quests. I identified three striking similarities in these conversations. First, each had spent his or her life seeking the American dream, the good life, which they described using combinations of words like comfort, success, control, wealth, security, respect. These were folks adept at managing their lives so that everything worked out well and was tightly quality controlled. The second thing they shared in common was that each had suffered a crisis of some sort. To a person, each had experienced the unraveling of their well-oiled life. A failed marriage, a life-shattering death, a lost job, a bankruptcy, a personal illness requiring a complete life reset, a crippling addiction, the dissolution of a family, the loss of significant community. Regardless of what it was, the crisis hit, and almost overnight, everything they thought they had known and built lay in shambles around them, and they found themselves wandering in a wilderness. The third commonality in each story was that once weathered, the life-sucking crisis had produced a shift in perspective that had been ultimately life-giving. They talked about lessons learned, about control and consumption. They talked about how much more comfortable they were with the ambiguities, paradoxes, and mysteries of life. They talked about seeing reality differently. They described the freedom in accepting that some things just couldn't be fixed, nor did they have to make everything right or fix it all. They described this common shift in perspective that followed significant loss as painfully acquired wisdom. To attain knowledge, add things every day, advises Lao Tzu. To attain wisdom, remove things every day. These folks had discovered the truth of this koan, that one can gain by losing, that detachment from outcomes is a path to wisdom. These real-life stories coinciding and connecting with my dream work invited me to seek wisdom in unconventional places that might be risk-laden and that might involve hurt, pain, and loss. In 2013, when I lost my job suddenly and the bottom fell out of my own well-ordered, successful life, these wisdom stories of real-life people facing crises and wisdom lessons from the dream world combined in powerful ways to guide me through my own wilderness. Coincidence? Accident? Maybe. But deep mystery, to be sure. Since then, I've looked for wisdom wherever I could find it, which leads me to another morsel I want to share. Wisdom paths are all around us, everywhere we look. Recognizing those paths has as much to do with the way we see and how we listen as it does with the information we acquire and the knowledge we possess, like the story Ruth shared. Marilyn Vos Savant had the highest recorded IQ listed in the Guinness Book of World Records when they were still recording them. The accuracy of IQ tests is disputed now, but nonetheless, Marilyn's scores indicate that she is one intelligent person. She said this: to acquire knowledge, one must study. To acquire wisdom, one must observe. And philosopher-musician Jimi Hendrix said, knowledge speaks, wisdom listens. These creative, brilliant people understand that wisdom comes in many forms and that knowledge and wisdom are not synonymous. Observing keenly, listening carefully, these offer wisdom, and wisdom involves how we live, how we apply what we know to real situations. In the words of Immanuel Kant, science is organized knowledge, wisdom is organized life. This tension between knowledge and wisdom has moral and ethical implications. To be truly wise, what we know and believe to be true and how we relate to ultimate ideas and insights must affect the way we live in the world, what we value, who we respect or marginalize, and how we understand and enact justice, wealth, power, and compassion. Wisdom is more than a concept. Wisdom is a practical way of life, embodied, incarnate, human. Back in May, when I was recovering from unexpected surgery, I encountered a fascinating wisdom teacher in the guise of Chief Inspector Armand Gamache, the central character in the mystery novels of Louise Penny. Since May, I have immersed myself in Penny's novels because I am fascinated by this character who incarnates wisdom. Listen to how the novels describe him. Many might have thought that the chief inspector was a hunter because he tracked down killers, but he wasn't that. He was an explorer by nature, never happier than when he was pushing the boundaries, exploring the internal terrain, areas even the persons themselves hadn't explored, had never examined, probably because it was too scary. Gamache was the best, the smartest and bravest and strongest, because he was willing to go into his own head alone and open all the doors there and enter all the dark rooms and make friends with what he found there. Armand Gamache had always held unfashionable beliefs. He believed the light would banish the shadows, that kindness was more powerful than cruelty, and that goodness existed even in the most desperate places. He believed that evil had its limits. I'm drawn to this complex character because of his simple wisdom path, packaged in four sentences he seeks to embody. I'm sorry. The Rumsfeldites up here already know this one. I don't know. I'm wrong. I need help. When I read these for the first time, I was struck by the practical wisdom they encompassed. They're simple, yet far from simplistic. What might the world look like if we chose to live this way, if we fashioned our lives around them? I'm sorry I hurt you. I'm wrong about that. I don't know, do you? I need your help. These are relational statements. They belie the reality that we are relational beings, interconnected and interdependent. Human beings inflict harm on each other, both intentionally and unintentionally. While harm cannot be erased by mere words, the embodiment of these words can go a long way in helping to alleviate the suffering and pain our behavior can inflict. Connie Purcell's blog piece, Wisdom of Four, addresses Gamache's fourfold path. Her blog is worth reading in its entirety, but listen to this excerpt. There is something Buddha-like in these four statements. After reading them, I started thinking about what it would be like to fashion a life, a way of being, around them. If life means suffering, as one of Buddha's noble truths declares, then perhaps it would be worthwhile to examine what these sentences might entail in practical application, not just in a fictional realm. To what extent might these sentences, these axioms, ease suffering? She asked. Remember, Gamache hunts murderers. He knows the depravity to which humans can stoop and the suffering they can inflict. Yet his wisdom is born out of the humility and respect rather than violence, fear, power, threat, or control. These four sentences that rule his life and career reek of trustworthiness and embodied gentleness. His firm yet kind, patient way of embracing humanness, warts and all, as Purcell suggests, has the potential to ease relational pain. So many times, persons within congregations of all ilks fall prey to self-oriented apathy and rudeness. We demand our own way. We insist on being right. We pride ourselves on being the most knowledgeable. We ignore the pain of others or judge them for how they got that way and assume we know the choices they must have made that landed them in the stew they're in. Instead of kindness, we choose arrogance, focusing on that which supports our own biases. How easy it is to blame others, to choose loneliness, alienation, and individualism over community, to feign more knowledge than we have and visit our opinions and our need to be right on everyone around us. To resist admitting the harm we inflict with our tempers or our apathy or our judgment. One alternative, hard but fruitful way of wisdom is to admit when we're wrong, when we need help, when we don't know, when we need forgiveness. Seeking wisdom does not have to be complicated. It can be as simple as being intentional about the search, as paying attention to the ways your inner and outer lives sync up, as observing intently and reflectively that which is happening around you, as simple as looking for the wisdom to be found in the most unlikely places, mystery novels included, and then recognizing that wisdom is lived reality with practical, ethical, and moral expressions. If you do nothing else in the days ahead, consider Armand Gamache's wisdom path. Learn to live by his four sentences. I don't know, I am wrong, I am sorry, I need help. Sometimes the most profound wisdom is hidden in the simplest of places. Now these are my most helpful wisdom morsels, but my wisdom doesn't need to be your wisdom. This is more a call to ask yourself honestly and clearly what you do seek, to add wisdom to the list of things you seek, or to identify what your wisdom is, who embodies wisdom for you, where you find it, what paths lead you toward it. We need wisdom. We need it badly, because our world is too dangerous for anything but wisdom, and too small for anything but compassion.